Yud Beis Shabbat, Friday the 22nd of January, Rabbi Alan Kimchi, The Miraculous Nature of the Mon.
Nice to see everybody here. This whole program is a wonderful Kiddush Hashem, coming together every morning, learning Torah Barabim, and it's a privilege to be part of this program and in this wonderful Beis HaMedrash, which is my local, the closest Beis HaMedrash to my house. So I feel a special affinity. Wonderful atmosphere here in this particular Beis HaMedrash. I'd like to say a few words about the way in which Chazal understood the koichos, the special koichos of the mon. Before that, I just want to share with you very briefly an idea which I saw in the writings of Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky on this week's parsha, which I find fascinating and I think has some very important implications. The pasuk says in Bishalach chapter 14, Vayugad lemelech Mitzrayim kiborach ha'om, Vayehofech levav paro avodah v'la'om, Vayomru, etc., etc. Paro decides to pursue Klal Yisrael into the Yam Suf, and that's it. That's the end of Paro and his armed forces, Yoro Vayom, destroyed in the Midbar, in the Yam Suf. Says Rashi, what was it particularly that spurred Paro on to pursue Klal Yisrael into the Yam Suf? Says Rashi, "Kiven sheyegia l'shloshes yomim shekavu leilech v'lashuv." Moshe Rabbeinu had said, "Meilech shloshes yomim b'midbar." He saw they'd gone for 3 days. V'ro she'enu chozer b'mitzrayim, and he was told that they weren't coming back. They were going further. Bovi yidul Paro b'yom ravi v'hamishi v'shishi rod v'achrayim. So the on the fourth day he got the news. On the fifth and sixth day he ran after them. And on day seven was Kriyas Yamsuf. That's Rashi. Rashi quoting Chazal. Just in parenthesis, there's a stira in Rashi. It's because Rashi, the very, very last Rashi in Shlach Lecha on Tzitzis, says, why are there 8 strands of the Tzitzis? Because Kriyas Yamsuf happened on the 8th day. As I stated in Rashi at the end of Shlach Lecha, here Rashi says on the 7th day. That's a subject for a separate shiur, homework for you, Rabbeisai, how to resolve this stira in Rashi. It's an interesting thing, that's not my topic for the moment. But you see here one thing very clearly, that to the very last moment, Paro was still had in his mind, Derech Shloshes Yomim Bamidbar, right? And the question is, what was that all about? What did HaKadosh Baruch Hu mean? What did Moshe Rabbeinu mean when he said, tell Paro we want to go for 3 days in the Midbar? Was that deception? Was he deceiving Paro? Was there ever an intention to go only for 3 days by Midbar? Was this simply a way of fooling him? What was the point here? Okay, this is, again, a larger subject. I'm just going to give you 2 terutzim on this. Each one a different school of thought on how to understand the parasha. One is the Droshas Haran. Ran was one of the Rishonim, and he wrote a famous Sefer, the Droshas Haran, where he deals with some of the key issues in Torah. And he actually has a mahalach here on this question, where he says, actually, this was indeed a ruse. This was a way of fooling Paro. There was never an intention to go only Shloshes Yomim Bamidbar. He was being fooled, and why was he being fooled? In order to draw him to his own destruction. In other words, it was only because of this Shloshes Yomim Bamidbar concept that Paro decided to gallop into the Yam Suf and to pursue them. Otherwise, he would have simply let them go. But because of this idea of 3 days in the Midbar, this was a key idea in fooling Paro into believing that Klal Yisrael would come back, and therefore destroying himself. And Aruch Haim HaKadosh adds a little bit of an addition to this. He says this was part of the Midah Keneged Midah of Paro. Paro had fooled Klal Yisrael, Beperach, right? She'avdu behem beporach. had fooled Klal Yisrael, had trapped them into becoming slaves. So part of the Oynish was that he should himself feel what was it like to have been fooled. He suddenly realized, I've been had. I've been tricked by this people. That was part of his Oynish. This is all in the Drosh, according to the Mahalat of the Drosh Surah. But I saw in Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky a very, very interesting idea, where he says there was indeed an initial plan of Derech Shloshes Yomim Bamidbar. There was a Havamim. Plan A was that Klal Yisrael would go for 3 days of Midbar and come back again. What sort of sense does that make? Says Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, if you look in Chazal, if you look in the Psukim, first of all, you know, we know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Avraham Avinu, Arba Meos Shana, there will be 400 years in Kigeria, Zarecho, Beretz Lohem, Avodum, Ba'inu Oysom, Arba Meos Shana, possibly say in the Haggadah, 400 years, and we know they were only there for 210 years. Right? That's a well-known feature Chazal mentioned in a few places. And that in the Haggadah we say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Chishev Es HaKeitz, HaKadosh Baruch Hu calculated the end of the Golos early. He made it early. Medalig al Hehorim, Chazal say there was a Dilug. HaKadosh Baruch Hu brought the Geula 190 years early. Why did he bring it early? Because Klal Yisrael had reached a level of spiritual deterioration that had they remained there a minute longer, they would have been unsalvageable. The Geula would not have been possible, because they had reached a low ebb in Mentes Shari Tumor, and therefore longer would have been impossible. But really, Alpi the Gzeres HaKosov, they should have been there 400 years. It says of Yaakov Kamenetsky, an amazing idea, and the truth is he wasn't the first person to say this. This is already written 300 years earlier in the writings of Rabbi Yonos and Eibershitz. He suggests that the original idea was that Klal Yisrael will go Shlosh Yomim Bamidbar, and in this 3 days, this is the origin of what I say of going for a Shabbaton, going away for a retreat. What do you think? A retreat to Shabbaton? Maybe the Torah way can organize for all of us a Shabbaton somewhere. Leilat Shloshes Yomim in Devon. Let's go for 3 days to Devon and have a retreat. Have a Torah seminar for 3 days. The original plan, you ever come and it was for 3 days they would go, and Moshe Rabbeinu would give them a chizuk, and they'd have like a mini Har Sinai experience. They'd already get a few mitzvahs, and enough to give them a chizuk that they could indeed go back to Mitzrayim and last another 190 years to fulfill the four. That was plan A. It's an amazing idea. That plan A was that indeed they weren't going to leave completely. They had to fulfill the Gzeiras HaKosov of Arba Meos Shana, right? And according to why it was necessary, Arba Meos Shana, that's not easy to understand. But according to Chazal, later Goluyos, the later Golos that we've endured, was only because we went out early. Chazal said in a few places. Had we done the whole 400 years, the whole Golos would have been Yotze Golos forever, and later on they would have gone to Eretz Yisrael, it would have been permanent. Al Kol Ponim, all this is in the Havamina. But says Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, that was the Havamina that really would only remain for a short time. Had Paro said yes to that option, that's what would have happened. It was only because he said no all the way that in fact it was decided that they should go completely. Okay. What's interesting, another little detail in this story is, Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky links this. He says, Lemaisa here in Yetzias Mitzrayim, this didn't happen. But there was a period in history where this did happen. When was that? Says Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, he says, this was the Bayis Sheni. The Bayis Sheni, he said, was never meant to be a Geula Acharonah. If you read the Sefer of Ezra, you will see, Klal Yisrael go back into Eretz Yisrael. And it's an amazing thing. Why nobody says, the Mashiach has come? And you ask yourself, why not? Zechariah had spoken about Mashiach, Yeshayah had spoken about Mashiach. Lots of people have said, you're going to go back to Eretz Yisrael, rebuild the base of Mikdash, and that's the Geula Acharona. And yet, they went back to Eretz Yisrael, they rebuilt the base of Mikdash. Nobody thought this was the Geula. Everybody knew this was what Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky calls a Geula Zemanis. It was a temporary Geula, which wouldn't last. They knew that from the beginning. So why was it important? In order to give Klal Yisrael the chizuk to be able to endure and to survive spiritually throughout the long galus that we are still in. right? We are still in the long galus. Had we not had the Bayis Sheni with all the Takanas Chachomim and all the Hillel and Shammai and all the Mishnah and all the additional halachas that Ezra Beis Dino instituted, like Tefillah B'Tzibur and the Nusach HaTefillah and all the Mitzvot Drabonon, all that was generated during the Bayis Sheni period, right? And that gave Klal Yisrael the tzurah, the strength to endure during the whole of the long galus. So that's what Rabbi Yehuda Kamenetsky says. That was plan A already at Yetzias Mitzrayim. They would go for 3 days, they'd get a chizuk, and they'd go back, and they would endure the whole thing. That was the original plan. Eventually, it didn't turn out like that because of the rishus of Paro. This is the first point I wanted to share with you very briefly. Coffee in the morning is a central part of Talmud Torah. Okay, I want to have a look at the Mon. The Mon is a subject which interests me a lot, and a lot of very, very wonderful Divrei Torah connected to the Mon. Let's have a look. I'm going to say two main nekudas, two main points, time permitting. I want to have a look at Chazal really drill into the whole issue of the Mon. Well, the first thing is so the pasuk says, "Hineni mamti lochem lechem min hashemayim v'yotzo am v'loktu d'vayom v'yomo." So the Mon falls for Klal Yisrael in the Midbar, and why is it falling? Obviously, it's falling in order that Klal Yisrael can survive the sustenance, the food in the Midbar, right? The matter that they finished what they brought with them, Misharosa, Mashichmon, they brought with them some food from Mitzrayim, but now they need to eat, fine. And now the Pasuk says something remarkable. The Pasuk now says, why am I giving them the Mon? Leman anasenu hayelech b'teirosi imlay. The Mon was a Nisoyan. Extraordinary. I would have thought the Mon is Chasdei Hashem. What is it about the Mon that is a Nisoyan? Why is it a test? It's not a test. It's food on your doorstep 7 days a week, or 6 days a week. But for 7 days a week, you're given food regularly, daily. What's the test? Where is the Nisoyan here in the Mon? This is a very interesting question. All the Rishonim and Farshim try and come to grips with this concept of Nisoyan. And you should know, later on in Parshas Akev, when Moshe Rabbeinu is recounting these events, he says, "V'zochatos aderech asher halichko Hashem lekecha zeh avoyim shona b'midbar, l'man anoscho l'naseischo." The Pasuk repeats it. It says, what was the point of 40 years in the Midbar with the Mon? A Nisoyan. And the Nisoyan means a test, right? By Lakim Nisso es Avraham. A test is usually something painful and difficult and demanding. The Mon was breakfast, lunch, and supper for 40 years. What was the Nisoyan? Okay, so there are two real ways of looking at this question, and both of them have got some very interesting insights to it. The Posh Pshat. I think the Posh Pshat is the Ramban. The Daz Kanim also brings this down, and he says Nisoyan Godol La'om Shenichnas LeMidbar B'Chesa Kolim. The Nisoyan was for Klal Yisrael to enter into the Midbar with nothing. The cupboard was bare; they had nothing with them, and they completely lived on Bitachon. Right? The Gemara actually adds the word, a concept which the Chazal use a few times, of Misha Ein Lo Pas Pesaloi. The concept of Ein Lo Pas Pesaloi means not only that you might have, imagine you've got food in the house for today, but for tomorrow, there's nothing in the fridge, there's nothing in the house, and there's no money in the bank. You've got no idea how you're going to survive tomorrow, but today you've got enough for today. Right? So that's a big Nisayim. You have to have the emuna that the same Ribbono Shel Olam who gave you sustenance today will give you sustenance tomorrow. Right? And this was, says the Ramban, the big Nisayim, the Nisayim really of poverty. Somebody who's got only enough food to survive today and nothing, he's got nothing in reserve for tomorrow, That is a tremendous nisayon of poverty. That was the nisayon, says the Ramban, and that seems to be Oscar Halton in the Gemara, which speaks about Eile Paspasaloi, the concept of not having anything for tomorrow. That this was the bitachon of Klal Yisrael. Rashi learns different shots. Rashi says, Laman anasenu, nothing to do with poverty. Rashi says, the man anasenu was, im yishmeru ha-mitzvahs ha-tuluyos bo. There were mitzvahs that were connected to the man. One of them was, shalai yusiru imenu ad-beker, not to hoard it, not to store it for tomorrow. If they would store it, it wouldn't help because it would go all moldy. But the mitzvah was that they shouldn't store anything. But they've got today, eat today, and tomorrow wake up with nothing. That was the mitzvah, and the other mitzvah was sheyetzu b'Shabbos lilkot, but they shouldn't go and look for it on Shabbos. So these two, these were the mitzvahs connected to the mom. Don't forget that the Klal Yisrael hadn't got the Torah yet, right? So they weren't used to having mitzvahs and instructions at this sort of level of detail. But here they are given the mom, but there are conditions attached to it. It says, Rashi, what does it mean, Laman anasenu? To see, are you any good at keeping halacha? We're going to give you two simple halachas with regards to this mom, not to hoard it and not to collect on Shabbos. That's Rashi's pshat. The Ksava Kabbalah, incidentally, has a third pshat. What does it mean, Laman anasenu? So he says something very interesting. What was the nisoyon of the mom? So again, the Gemara in Yumai, and Hay says that there were the mon fell closer to home for tzaddikim, a bit further away for beinonim, and for people who were even less than that, they had to go yotzom lilkoi, they had to go and look for it. Right? Says the Ksav Kabbalah, you were living with a daily barometer of your ruchnius, and it wasn't just a personal barometer; it was a public barometer. Are you following me? On a daily basis, how many people would survive living on a daily public announcement of where the person is holding in Ruchnius? Depending on his Kavona, on his Emunah, on his Yerushalayim, on his mitzvahs, whatever it depends on. That was the Nisayon, says the Ksav Kabbalah, to be able to live like that for 40 years. That you know that where you're holding in Ruchnius is being publicized to everybody, where you're up to. This was the greatness. That's a Ksava Kabbalah. I'm interested in the fourth pshat. I've got a fourth pshat here, and that is, right, not the Ramban that it's poverty, and not Rashi that it's halachas, and not the Ksava Kabbalah that it's a publicizing your madriga, but the fourth pshat is the Sforn. Sforna says, what is the pshat? What is the Nisayan? The Nisayan was a Nisayan of wealth, a Nisayan of affluence. In other words, Klal Yisrael were guaranteed, right? They have no problems with housing because they've got ananei hakavod. Simloscha lo bolscha mealecha, they've got no problem with clothing because that was also guaranteed. They've got no problem with food, right? So, says the Sforna, this is an enormous nisayon. Someone who's got suddenly, let's say suddenly somebody has given suddenly £20 million in the bank, and he'll never ever have to worry about his sustenance again. And the question is now, what do you do with your life? What do you really dedicate your life to when you have no worries? Right? What are you going to do? Right? How are you going to live when you have no worries at all? Right? That is a massive nisayon. That's the nisayon, in a sense. In a sense, it's the mirror image of the Ramban. It's put for care of the Ramban. The Ramban says the Nisayon was poverty. The Sforna says the Nisayon was affluence. That's the Nisayon. That's the Nisayon. So it's interesting to note, I'm just saying as a historical footnote, that Klal Yisrael throughout history have survived spiritually the Nisayon of poverty better than the Nisayon of affluence. If you look at the nations and the communities and the individuals, for example, in the 19th century particularly, but even in the 20th century and even today, the individuals who become particularly wealthy and powerful and influential, to preserve one's Yerushalayim and Diktuk HaMitzvahs in a situation of extreme wealth, that's a tremendous nisayon. The Mesillas Yesharim already says this in Perik Aleph of Mesillas Yesharim. Right, so he says, "Mufurish." Right, he says, "Kolin yonei ha'olam azeh hinei hein nisyonos la'adam ha'oini mitzad echad va'oishem mitzad sheni." Right, so the Besuchim Shalom says that everything in this world is a Nisayon. There are extreme situations. So extreme poverty, Chas V'Shalom, is a Nisayon. Extreme Aisha, so we don't like to say Chas V'Shalom, do we, Rabbi Say? We don't like to say Chas V'Shalom about extreme wealth. But the emes is Chas V'Shalom. Extreme wealth can be ma'avir odom al daito, can drive somebody mad, and they can lose their emunah and Yerushalayim, exactly like extreme poverty can, and probably more so. Right? And this is the machlekes here in this week's parsha between the Ramban and the Sforn. The Ramban says the ikar nisayon was poverty, and they had to overcome the poverty of having nothing in the house. The Sforn says, what do you mean nothing in the house? They were guaranteed a stipend. They were living on a scholarship. A scholarship from the Rebbeinu Shlomo every day delivered to your doorstep was to live on. And then they are covered. What's the poverty? So he says, this is the Oisha. This is the problem of wealth, right? The Nisayon of wealth. So the money, in a sense, is a microcosm of all the Nisayonos of Parnosa that Klal Yisrael had throughout throughout Jewish history. Both mitzad the oini and mitzad the oisha. It's interesting. In one sugya, you get both the poverty and the wealth are both there. I just want to add finally, this is maybe a vort that you can make a note of for Seder night. Right on Seder night, the halacha is the mitzvah of achilas matzah has got two halves to it, and that's indeed actually why we break the matzah in half. Because we want to have two halves to the mitzvah of matzah. The first half of the mitzvah is the first kazayis. The first kazayis is the first mitzvah. The other kazayis of matzah is the afikin. Right? We break the matzah in half. The first half we eat for al achilas matzah at the beginning of the meal, and we leave the second half for the last kazayis. We break the matzah in half because the matzah has got two sides to the mitzvah. Incidentally, if you look at the Gemara in Arvei Pesachim, there's a Machlokes Rishonim, interestingly, which of these two kazesim is the Ikar Mitzvah? You think it's obvious that the Ikar Mitzvah is the first kazayis, and you make the brach on it, and afikomen at the end is like a minig or something like that. Actually, Rashi and the Rashbam both say that the Ikar Mitzvah Achilas Matzah is the kazayis that is eaten al hasoiva at the end of the meal, the afikomen. That's the ikar mitzvah. It's just that because we're already eating matzah earlier, we make the bracha earlier, but really the mitzvah is at the end. And this ends up being a machlokes rishonim. What's interesting about this? Why is this interesting? I want you to try and follow this connection here. What's it got to do with our parsha? If you look at the halachas of eating these two kazayisim, so there's a whole Mishnah of Al Reb Sochim Samach L'Mincha Lo Yochal Odom Ad Shetechshach that you shouldn't eat on Erev Pesach, right? A whole Mishnah about that. And then we learn out Erev Shabbos, Erev Yontov, but the Ikka is, why? So that when it comes to eating the first Kazayis, how should you eat it? B'Teovon, you should eat it, you should feel hungry. The first Kazayis is eaten in hunger. Right, it's lechem oini, lachmo anyo. It's an expression of poverty. It's an expression of being starving. Right, eating the matzah in a state of starvation. And then you eat it. So the matzah here represents Klal Yisrael in a state of oini. Right, surviving spiritually, surviving with their emunah and Yerushalayim, even though they were in a state of oini. The last kazayis, what's the halacha? It has to be eaten al hasoiva. We don't find anywhere a mitzvah like that. To eat something, what does al soiva mean? That you're already, it's a freedom, you're already completely, you've eaten nicely, you've had the meat, you've had the food, you've had a lovely Seder night, and now the question is, how do you behave when you're feeling wealthy, when you're feeling full, when you're feeling affluent, right? And then to eat it, l'shem mitzvah, that is the nisayon of the kazayis achron. So actually, these two kazayisim reflect the machlokes in Beshalach between the Ramban and the Sforn. Are you following me on this? In other words, the Ramban and the Sforn argue here about the mom, but actually it's a machlokes about what really is the main, if you like, nisoyan for Klal Yisrael in matters of parnasa, which is symbolized by the mon, and the matzah also picks up this machlokes. So I can see I've really only got 6 minutes left. I'm going to try and do a very complicated sugya finally in 6 minutes, because it's something which is very fascinating. The pasuk says about the mon, "Vayomoydu ba'oima." They measured after they went out to collect the oima. They measured it, and miraculously, right, it didn't matter how much they had collected. Says Rashi, the pasuk, there was an oima legulgalis. However many people there were in your family, there was an oima per, right? The mamet and the marbet, didn't matter how much you collected, there was just enough for everybody, an oima. That was part of the nisim. And then the pasuk says, "Vayikru shemay mom." This is pasuk in chapter 16, pasuk 31. "Vayikru shemay mom, v'hu kazera gad lov." What is zera? What is gad? What is lov on? Exactly what the pasuk means. Okay, there are all sorts of perushim to this. But what I want to look at is a beautiful Gemara in Yuma Ayin Hey Amud Aleph, where the Gemara there takes the word gad gimel dalet, and explains that this actually refers to the word magid, and in other words, it told us something. The mom didn't just feed us, but it also had a message. What could it teach us? The mom could teach us something. So the Gemara says something very interesting. The Gemara says that shemagid lohem li Yisrael iben tisha l'rishon iben shivo l'achrein. What is this about? What is iben tisha l'rishon iben shivo l'achrein? The Gemara in Yuma Ayin Hey. What does that mean? So it's talking about a situation, very, very briefly, a woman who is either divorced or widowed from her first husband, and she remarries straight away. Later on, Chazal made a takonas chachomim of hachona that you have to wait 3 months before remarrying. But that's later on. This, they didn't have yet takonas chachomim, so a woman could be divorced or widowed and get remarried the next week. Right? She got remarried. And then she discovers she's pregnant. Right? And the question is, paternity. The question is, who's the father? Is it when the child is born, it could be a child that was born a bit early, and really it is the child of the second husband. Or it could be ben tisha l'risha, it could be a full-term baby. And if the father is the first husband, how do you know? And at la halacha, there are enormous nafkaminas, enormous differences, who's the father, right? Differences of Yerusha, differences of is a Kohen or a Levi, difference of Arroyas, who they can marry. There are very, very severe nafkaminas who the father is, right? So, and Lamaisa, there was no way of knowing, right? Says the Gemara, the Mon gave you the answer. Why did the Mon give you an answer? Oops. The Mon gave you an answer because it depended how much Mon felt. If the extra portion of Mon fell in the house of the first husband, the ex, that meant that this baby belonged to him. The Mon belonged to him. If the extra Oima fell in the house of the new husband, that meant that he was the father. That Azoi Shtei in the Gemara in Yuma Dabayin Hei Amad Alev Shem Magid Lahem, that it teaches them that it could. On this, there is a lot of material discussed in the Acharonim, for which I've only got 2 or 3 minutes to give you a hint of it, and it's raised here. If you want to have a look at it, one place, the easy place to look at is the Torah Tamima on the Pasuk, brings down this Gemara, and the Kasha is, we've got a principle in Chazal of Loi Bashomayim Hi. In other words, you're not allowed to use Nisim to resolve halachic questions. Right? This is the famous Gemara. This is the famous Gemara of Leibah Shemayim Hi in Bob Matzia, right? In Bob Matzia Nun Tes, the Gemara there speaks about the Tanu Shel Achnoi, a famous sugi in the Gemara, Rabbi Lezer and Rabbi Yeshua. Rabbi Lezer wanted to say a particular din about Tumma and Tara, and he said, if I'm right, the tree will turn upside down, the river will go upside down. In the end, a basko comes out. A basko. A voice from Hashemayim comes out and says, what do you want from Rabbi Eleza? The halacha is like Rabbi Eleza. And Rabbi Yeshua gets up and says, thank you very much. It's very nice to hear a basko. But ein mashkichim babasko. Right? We go achare haroiv. The roiv of the Chachamim said, a particular din, right? What Rabbi Eliezer says is very nice, and we're very pleased that he can elicit a baskal min hashamayim, but it's got nothing to do with halacha. Halacha we follow that there are procedures. There's roiv, there's savoras, there is edin, there are all sorts of halachic procedures which are kaveya for us what the halacha is, and this is the principle of loy bashamayim. The truth is, this is a very profound idea, and we should give a whole shiur about what does it mean about the nature of Torah Shebal Peh. So the question is, how could you use the mom, which was a miraculous solution to a halachic problem? That is the question. And on that, there are some very interesting answers. Very, very briefly, the Kappas Tamorim, who was writing 350 years ago, the Rav in Salonika and afterwards in Yerushalayim. So the Kappas Tamorim writes that really you have to say, because of the power of this Kasha, you have to say that really Moshe Rabbeinu, when he paskened this din, whether the child was Ben Tisha L'Rishon and Ben Shiva L'Acharon, he paskened on the basis of Savora and on the basis of evidence. And the mon only came as a supporting, in order to convince the tzibur that his psak was right. Sometimes, because a moifus, you can't paskin alochas with a moifus. Right? It doesn't work like that. Right? And this is that's how the Kappas Tamorim, right? This is actually a Tosfos in Erev and Davov, where Tosfos asked the question, where they wanted to know whether Paschal like Beis Hillel or Beis Shammai, so a Baskel came out and said, Eilu Beilu Dibri Lekim Chaim, but Halacha could Beis Hillel ask Tosfos, Eid Mashkichim but Baskel. How can a Baskel tell us Halacha's Beis Hillel? So Tosfos says, no, really, Beis Hillel was the Roiv. And really, without the Baskel, we pass like Beis Hillel. Only because the Tzibur weren't sure, because Beis Shammai were mechudodim tefei, Beis Shammai were very intelligent and very learned, so they needed a Baskel to reinforce it. Similarly, says the Kappas Tamorim, that happened here also with the Mon. The Mon only came to reinforce a Psak that was given al Darkei HaPsak. I must tell you that the Torah Tamima and the Maritz Chayas and the Birkha Yosef, they all say different pshat. There's a difference between a Sofek Bedin and a Sofek B'Metzias. Okay, this is a long Shia, right? That when you have a Sofek Bedin, if you have a Sofek in how to Paskin, that you can't clarify on the basis of a Nevuah or Nisim. But when it comes to a Sofek B'Metzias, what's the reality? That if a Novi can tell you what the reality is, that's fine. That's how the Torah Tamim answers it. But there are lots of problems with that, exactly how that works. And I'll just finish off by saying to you that these answers also resolve the question which the Achronim ask about what does it mean, teiku tishbi yitaretz kushas v'abayas. Well, Yoanov is going to come and be machriya, he's going to tell us how to paskin. How can he use his nevuah to tell us how to paskin? So according to these two terutzim, will be two terutzim about Yoanov as well. According to the Kappas Tamorim, Eliyahu HaNovi can only come and resolve our shailas la'alocha using his yediyas in Torah, using his status as a Talmud Chacham. The fact that he's a Novi will give more status, more credibility to his psak. But actually, he's giving a psak based on Darkei HaPsak. Otherwise, it's not valid, would say the Kappas Tamorim. Torah Tumimah will say that Be'etzem, so long as he comes and only paskens a Sofik B'Metzias, and if he comes and tells us who a person is or what it is or something which is lost, Achiyobo Elio, El Kambi Machriya, how things, who does it belong to, that's a Sofik in reality. It's not a Sofik in Din. That he'd be allowed to do, but a Sofik B'Din he wouldn't be allowed to do. And this is, Be'ez Hashem, we'll soon hear from Elio Anovi himself. Exactly, in hair of your main or main.
Well, so just before Tony speaks, everybody wants to sponsor.